Welcome to From Everywhere to Everywhere by OMF New Zealand. In our lives, sometimes it can be hard to see how God is working. This is a podcast about His faithfulness, told to you through the lives of people who have been with Him in the depths of the valley and on the heights of the mountaintop. Our prayer is that you'll be encouraged by these stories and empowered to live lives surrendered to God, knowing that He can always be trusted. Kia ora, I'm Jessie Chang, your host for this episode. Today we're looking at God's faithfulness when it comes to family. As a Christian, and often even more so for someone who works in ministry, some of our biggest worries and anxieties involve family members and figuring out how to deal with or look after them. Here are some stories told by OMF workers about trusting God to take care of their whānau in difficult situations.
My name is Deanne Freeman, and I am part of OMF New Zealand, and I live and serve in North Thailand as part of OMF Mekong Minorities. And Mekong Minorities is one of the sectors that focuses on minority tribes within a majority country. So we work with the Northern Thai, or the Thai Yun people group, which originated from the southern part of China and then migrated down to the northern parts of Thailand. And I've been there with my husband and three children now for 7 years.
Can you tell me about a time when you experienced God's faithfulness in terms of your family?
Just one.
unfortunately, we
don't have all day. Fair enough. It's an interesting topic, isn't it? Because I know when my husband and I both felt called to go into missions, actually, we were both right around 30, and we were thinking about starting a family, and we were involved in a couple of short-term trips overseas to North Thailand with our church here in Auckland. And so we were sort of considering mission suddenly, which was quite a big change for us. Mm-hmm. And from that first sort of point of feeling like God was calling us to do cross-cultural missions overseas, I, to Jeremy, said, look, you know, I think we can go over and we can do missions, but when it's time for, you know, if we have children and it's time for them to start schooling, then I think that would be the time for us to come back from the field and be back in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we were thinking like we could give it a 3 to 5 year time frame and then that would be it. Mm-hmm. And then we went to this missions conference as really our first time to begin exploring missions. And the very first session that we sat in on was this group panel of a bunch of TCKs who were now adults.
And just so for people who don't know.
Yes. What TCK is third culture children. So these were all missionary kids who had grown up on the mission field and then had repatriated back into New Zealand to live and work as adults. And every single one shared how they felt like their life was enriched and was just a lot richer and fuller because of being raised on the mission field. And I came away from that session feeling like God was saying, are you going to trust, like you're trusting me with your life? I can take care of your kids' lives too, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it was this very early story of God reassuring me that He can be faithful and provide not just for me and for my husband and for our work or health or that, but actually He could provide for our kids as well.
Because what were your worries around there?
Well, I think that it was concerning thinking about, are they going to get a good education? You know, there's always a concern for risk and harm to happen to your kids. I think raising them in a developing country, you worry if they will have the same opportunities that they would have in their home country for education or ballet lessons or just the things that you feel like are going to be really important in your child's life. Mm-hmm. And you're not sure you'll be able to provide that on the mission field.
Right.
I was really passionate about the work that I was doing back here in the corporate sector and really wanted to have the opportunity to keep doing something to contribute in some sort of way if we did go on the missions field, but not knowing if there would be schooling options that would be suitable for the girls, or would I need to be homeschooling them and kind of working out would God be calling me to do that, which didn't sound personally very appealing. Mm-hmm. So I think that those were some of the biggest concerns, particularly around education. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then, you know, we went on the field, and I can think about experiencing His faithfulness when we decided to have a child on the field. We had two girls when we went over. They were 4.5 and 2.5. And they were both born here in New Zealand. And then we went overseas and we did a year of full-time language learning. And then we moved up north. And then we had our youngest daughter, who's now 4.5 there in Chiang Mai. And just experiencing God's faithfulness through that. In terms of being away from family, I was quite unwell through a lot of that pregnancy. And then her delivery was not, I mean, it was fast, but it wasn't very smooth. And but seeing God's provision in those early days, just predominantly through both ties, like friends that we had developed, visiting and, you know, just helping hold the baby, mm-hmm. through to other OMF people that we knew, other expats living and working in North Thailand, jumping in and helping. I can think about one particularly challenging time where Jeremy was flying to New Zealand to come back for a friend's wedding. He'd been asked to be the celebrant, you know, to officiate the marriage ceremony, and he also wanted to come back and connect with some family before they moved overseas. And our youngest was 7 weeks old, and then the other girls were 6 and 4. And so I knew it was going to be a really busy couple of weeks, but we felt like it was important for him to come back to be here for those events. While he was still in transit, I think he, you know, was flying from Thailand to maybe Sydney and then on to Auckland, my middle daughter had a seizure at home early one morning.
Right, okay.
And so I remember like holding my 7-week-old baby. I'm like, Gwyneth, careful, you're going to get your hair and your toast. And suddenly realizing, oh my goodness, something's going on. I didn't really know what was happening. And then after that, you know, a million things kind of go through your head. And as I'm like throwing the kids into the car and we're trying to drive down the way to go and get, you know, medical help. I was just going to go to the hospital that was close by. I was initially, you know, feeling overwhelmed. And yet at the same time, I was able to message someone that we knew who lived in the same neighborhood to say, hey, this is happening. When you wake up, because it was like 6 o'clock in the morning, mm-hmm. when you wake up, can you contact me? I might need some help, maybe meeting me at the hospital. And then I phoned up my sister. I was really thankful that one of my sisters is a physician in the States, so I could ask her, here's what's happened. You know, do you think this is seizure? And she was able to say yes. And here's, you know, kind of what you need to do. And then over the next 2 weeks, because Jeremy was out of town, and yet being able to see God's help and his faithfulness by providing people to come along and help. We had to go through several lengthy medical tests with my daughter to try to work out why she'd had the seizure. Was there, you know, an issue? And although it was scary because there were, you know, talks of some sort of like focal abnormality or a tumor, and with Jeremy being out of town, it was just scary. But at the same time, having people that I didn't know very well, but, you know, were part of our mission or were other believers in the area coming to the hospital to hold my newborn baby and play with my 6-year-old so I could get the 4-year-old to do the test that needed to be done. Through to people bringing meals and caring for us that way. I had a lady that I didn't know well, but she found out about the situation and offered to take my kids to school in the morning so that I wasn't trying to like pack up the baby. And so during that initial period, we experienced God's faithfulness, but it carried on in that we actually had health dramas over that year with the other two children as well. The baby wasn't growing and the oldest daughter, suddenly her hearing wasn't right. And it was weird because it just kept thinking, we're just a normal Kiwi family, and yet just one thing after another seemed like it kept popping up. And yet in each of those cases, there was one particular month where we were kind of overwhelmed by all of it, and there were these major issues. We'd booked in to take our youngest back here to Starship to get tested for cystic fibrosis, because that was actually what they thought were causing all these growth issues, and that was really scary. And then we had ruled out our middle daughter having a brain tumor or anything. The MRI had showed that was not an issue, but we were discussing her needing to go onto medication, but that causes problems with your liver and kidneys. So we were, you know, weighing up our options with that. And then the oldest daughter with her hearing issue. And we're like, I feel like the wheels are kind of falling off the bus. Mm-hmm. And so we put it into our newsletter. And we agonized about that because we didn't want to betray our children's privacy by like broadcasting on high, here's these health issues, which can feel private, you know, mm-hmm. especially for a child. But also genuinely asking our supporters and wider networks to pray. And it was amazing that in that month, after we put it in the newsletter, and it sounds hokey, and I wouldn't believe it if I didn't experience it firsthand, all three of those situations were completely resolved. The youngest daughter had not put on more than 200 grams in a month. And suddenly, for no known reason, the doctors couldn't explain it, she did a kilo.
Wow.
And it was the most she'd ever put on in a month. And by like, what, 4 or 5 times her normal weight gain for the month. Middle daughter had not had any more seizures, and the physician sort of recommended that we just wait with the medication and see how it goes. And that was completely calm. There were no sort of seizures happening there. And then our oldest daughter, we took her back to a different specialist for the to start discussing what sort of issues could be causing her hearing problem. Hearing was great. It was the weirdest thing. And again, this, you know, the audiologist was like, I just don't get it, because I was there. I did the test last time. I saw it happening, and, you know, it was resolved. And we just thought, oh my goodness, it felt truly miraculous.
Mm-hmm.
And that all happened around the same time that Jeremy landed back from his trip. I guess this would be the previous month. Jeremy came back from that trip in New Zealand. And the first day he got back, he was coaching a basketball game. He's always been involved in coaching at one of the international schools where half of the student body is Thai.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've always seen that as another great way to just build connections within the Thai community in our area. So he was coaching a game and was downpouring with rain, just bucking with rain. And so I took the kids off to grab some food on the drive home. And he'd only arrived in this morning, you know, that morning. So we're all excited to see him, but he was busy with the game. So we headed off, and the roads were flooding. And so I parked on the side of the road, because that's where you park in Thailand. There's no sort of proper parking lots, really. You just end up parking on the sides of the road, and it's all a little bit dodgy. Pretty much. So we park, and the kids and I, so at this point, Lena is, again, like, not even 3 months old, and I had my youngest, I had her in a little front pack, kind of resting on my chest.
Right.
And then I was holding a small child on either side, because they're, you know, 4 and a half, 6 and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And we cross over halfway across the road, and then I look across and see that it's just an absolute lake on the other side. But about 10 meters down, it was sort of drier. And so we started to walk right. It was basically in the middle of the road, which, of course, hindsight being 20/20, I look back and I was like, oh, that was so stupid. I'm walking in the middle of a road with my children. But we were walking, and I had checked, and there were no cars coming on either side. And we were about halfway through that sort of like 10 meter amount. And suddenly I felt, it was like this almost out of body, slow motion experience. But I felt my kids being tugged. And then I felt something hit me from behind. And we were actually being hit by a car. And the car wasn't zooming, because visibility was low and it was right at dusk and it was bucketing with rain. But we were still all being hit and then pulled underneath this car. Again, when I think about this from a logical standpoint, I'm like, how did we not die? Or mm-hmm. how did we not get these awful injuries? I remember getting my arms up to protect the baby, you know, because I'm being pulled down, and so I'm going to hit on my tummy. And then I had this young baby on my chest, so I let go of the girl's hands. I got my arms up, and they got scraped, but that was the extent of the injuries. I had sort of like bruises and things. The two children were stuck under the car, which was terrifying. I could pull myself, kind of like scooch myself out from underneath, because the car stopped, and it was kind of like, mostly we were covered by the car,
okay.
But I could scooch out to the front, and then I couldn't get the children out, and so I thought the tires were sitting on them, you know, like on either mm-hmm. side. And so I remember shouting to the driver to just reverse to get, you know, to get the cars off of their bodies. And then we got them up, and they both stood up, and I kept, like, I couldn't comprehend what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
And we were trying to go to this little local place to grab some food that we would go to regularly. So they knew us. And of course, they heard the commotion and came racing outside. And the owner, like, she went and fetched blankets. And then the baby was screaming. And I remember the girls, like, crying, like, what if it's, you know, hurt our baby? And to make a very, you know, long story short, we had no serious injuries. And it didn't make any sense. When you looked at, like, the width of how wide we were, and it was this little, just junky car, they should have been rolled over. The tires should have gone over the children's backs.
Right.
But it didn't.
And even completely
missed them. Yes. Okay. And if it had gone over their bodies, you know, like, there would have been internal injuries.
Mm-hmm.
But there was nothing. And so we had scrapes. We had bruises. One of my daughters, the side where, so she was on this side, so it meant that the tire was kind of here. A lot of her hair here was singed. That's how close, because it would have been hot right up next to that wheel.
Yes.
So, I mean, it would have gone like this, but it didn't crush her head, you know. And to see God's faithfulness in what really did feel like a miracle that I experienced firsthand with my kids was just overwhelming. and undeniable as well. And I think that's, I guess, been one of the unexpected blessings of following God's call, which was very different to how I had planned out my life, especially the years of raising children when they're small. You know, I kind of wanted to do it in my close. We were very connected with our church here, and we've got family that were 4 kilometers down the road from us. And so when suddenly I felt like God was calling us to live and work overseas, I thought, that's not really how I imagined raising children. But it's been such a joy and something I didn't expect, to see God's faithful provision and protection and help as we have, I guess, followed his leading to, you know, to remove ourselves from the life that we planned for ourselves here and go overseas.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think God was teaching you in that season where it seemed like there was
one thing after another
with your family?
Yeah. I think he continues to push my faith. I have always had a fairly deep faith, but I think that really it's only until the rubber hits the road and you truly hit challenges, and not just challenges for yourself, but for me, like challenges within my kids, things that I can't fix, I can't solve, and I have no control over.
Mm.
I think with each of those things, as they continue to pile up, I think he's continued to say, do you trust me? Do you trust that I'm good and that I can handle the situation? Because I've always wanted to control things and do things in my own strength, and am often quite capable to take care of things on my own. And I'm not as good at actually going before him and asking for his help. Mm-hmm. And so I think he just continued to like up the ante to the
you
point where
haven't learned this lesson yet. Here's
I know, I'm going to give you another growth opportunity. A friend of mine talks about, excellent, another growth opportunity. But there's real truth in that, right? That actually I think God continues to stretch us. And if we think about faith as like a muscle, the more we exercise it and the more it's pushed, then the more it grows and the stronger it becomes. And I really think that that's something that God continues to teach me for these last 7 years. Do you trust me? And do you trust me even with your kids? You know, that was something I shared that before we even got on the mission field. And at that point, when we were first feeling like God was leading us to be willing to go overseas, we didn't have children. We were talking about it. But from the very beginning, I think it's been, do you trust me completely?
Mm.
And that means giving over my plans for my life, giving over my plans for what type of work I want to do, and then also giving over my plans of how I want to raise my kids.
My name is Elspeth Kong. I'm married to Ben. I'm a volunteer with OMF based in Christchurch. And I think I would call myself a mobilizer. Networking. I love networking. Connecting people. Yeah.
And you've also served with OMF overseas, right?
Yes.
On the missions field.
Yes. A long time ago. I met Ben in Bible College, then called BCNZ, in 1971-72. We married in 73. Went to Thailand with our first baby in 74, and we came back in 91. Yeah, we were in South Thailand working amongst Buddhists.
Can you tell me about a time when you experienced God's faithfulness in terms of your family?
Oh, definitely. Well, then probably there are lots of little miracles along the way, but the one that stands out for me most significantly is very early in our time in Thailand. Tim, our oldest, was about 3 months old when we arrived in Thailand, and we went straight into language school. And then some people who listen to this may know a little bit of the history of South Thailand at that time. We moved to South Thailand within a month or two of the bodies of, or the remains of two of our missionaries, Minka and Margaret, who had been kidnapped a year previously by local bandits, and they had asked for a huge ransom and unbelievable demands before they could be freed. Well, those demands for ransom went on for that whole year. During that year, we had left New Zealand, we were in Fiji when they were kidnapped. visiting Ben's family, and then we went to Singapore 3 months OC, and then we went to Bangkok language study. It was towards the end of our 9 months in language study in Bangkok that we got the news that their bodies, skeletons, had been found in the jungle.
Right, yeah.
And they'd been shot in the head. For me, that was a very significant time because Minka was one of the very first IMF missionaries I ever met. Mm. When I was in high school in our ICF group, Minka came and spoke in Geraldine, South Canterbury, to our little ICF group. And she was a nurse, and this is at the point of my call. I at 14, 15 years old, I felt that God was calling me to serve somewhere overseas, and that nursing would be the best skill I could develop. And so my connection with Minka was very significant in my call. And I was hugely, pretty heartbroken to think that we'd almost got there and that Minka and Margaret would not be there. But we went to live in the very same town that they had lived in.
That must have been quite nerve-wracking.
I don't think we thought of it like that, but we were very conscious of the fact that it was... we were going into a pretty rough part of Thailand.
Mm.
A lot of people, Bangkok people, would never go to South Thailand. But the IMF team was quite strong there in those days. There was a big team working amongst Buddhists and a big team working amongst, when I say big, 20, probably we had 50 or 60 missionaries in South Thailand. The Saibri Hospital was also really humming at that time. But, of course, language learning was our priority. At that stage, we lived in Patani town, and Ben went 2 or 3 days a week. He would ride his motorbike out to the Kokpo, another town, a small, I don't know how to say it in English, a small country town, mm-hmm. where we were going to be based after we'd done 6 months of language. And we were going to move into the home of our senior missionaries who were going home on home assignment. So Ben was not in town. I was probably 7 or 8 months pregnant with my second child,
mm-hmm.
at that point, and I was trying to do some extra language study. So I used to have my lessons in the early part of the afternoon when Tim, our 2-year-old, would be having his afternoon nap. So on this particular day, my language teacher had come to the house. It didn't seem significant, but it was significant that on that particular day he didn't come on his motorbike as usual. He came on a Samlo, tricycle,
okay,
a taxi tricycle kind of thing. He didn't, which meant there were no vehicles sitting outside my house, so it looked as if I was home alone. And a wee way into my lesson, there was someone came. And sort of bang at the shop front, those concertina doors that open. And when I looked up, I could see a woman holding a baby with a gentleman behind her. And she wanted to visit with us. So I immediately thought she'd come from the church in the next town.
Mm-hmm.
So I went over to start to talk to them. And the doors were... I don't think they were locked, but they were closed. My Thai wasn't great at that time. We'd only been in Thailand less than a year, a bit over a year probably. And they were talking, and they asked to see my children. I said, well, I've got a small son, but he's sleeping. And they said, well, can we see him? And I maybe that's what triggered my language informant to be a bit wary. So he came forward, and he wouldn't open the door, the grill door, but he opened the inner door, which was pulled it right back so we could actually see who was outside. And to the left of that woman, there were 3 men. They kept saying they wanted to see the little boy. And I kept saying, well, I'm trying to do language study. I don't want to wake him up. But I said, I'll show you a photograph of him. And looking back, it's really bizarre, but at the time I thought it was quite natural. we had this, we thought, gorgeous looking 2 year old, and everyone liked to see him and pinch him and poke him, but like they do with the foreigners' children. And then my teacher took the album off me and flicked through the pages, and he chose a photo to show them, which was Tim asleep on Ben's shoulder with a sun hat that had a brim right over his face and a flap at the back. I don't know whether you remember those old old sun hats.
Super kids, fashionable.
Yeah, kids used to wear. And he was asleep, so you couldn't see his face or anything. And I think Sawai was giving this, my teacher was giving these guys a message. Then he just spoke to them rapidly, and I realised quickly that he wasn't speaking Thai, he was speaking Malay.
Right.
And they walked off. And as they walked off, there were two or three other men round the corner of the house where we couldn't see. And they had their car, they'd backed their car in the driveway. And my teacher made a big point of standing outside and writing the number plate of their car down and made sure they could see what he was doing. Well, you know, they could obviously see. Then he didn't even come back inside. He locked me in the door and said, go upstairs and go and have a sleep. I have to go somewhere. And he left, locked the door, closed all the doors. Don't open the doors to anyone, was his instruction. I was oblivious. I went upstairs, had a good, probably another hour, an hour snooze with Tim. And next I woke up to hear Fiona Lindsay, one of our Malay team people, English lady, she was pounding on the door and yelling and screaming and calling me to come down. I came down and I said, what's the problem? She said, and she came inside, locked the door again, and we went back upstairs. And she told me that group of people had been, so I recognized, my teacher recognized them. And they were a group that are regularly kidnapping the children of wealthy Chinese in the area. And that's what they'd come to kidnap him. And he'd immediately left my place, our place, and went to the local police, gave them the names of the people that he recognised and the number of their car. Mm. And then he went across to the missionaries and said, someone has to go and be with Elspeth until Ben gets home. And you need to keep her and the children safe, and Tim safe. So that was a real eye-opener to me. I realised that, what happened with Minka and Margaret was they had, when they were kidnapped, they had just arrived at a clinic when this similar group, well, I don't know if it's the same group, came in and took Minka and Margaret away at gunpoint and kidnapped them. And it was only less than 5 minutes later that Fiona, who'd come to me to tell me this news, was supposed to be at that clinic, and she arrived 5 minutes later to find all the patients in an absolute panic, mm-hmm. that the two nurses had been taken at gunpoint, mm-hmm. and that Mika and Margaret were never seen again. Mm-hmm. So this was a big test for us. I can remember after Tim went to sleep that night, Ben and I sat on the bed and just cry out to the Lord, what are we going to do? You've called us here. We can't live in fear.
Mm.
We have to, and we were quite afraid, but we really thought we've got to be sensible. We've got to be wise, but we've not going to run away. And he gave us that verse still stands out in my mind. Be still and know that I am God.
Mm.
And that's always been my steadying point, I think. And in lots of other times in my life when I've been really afraid for all sorts of reasons,
mm.
be still and know that I'm God. And shortly after that, OMF decided to send Tim and I and Ben to Saibory Hospital compound, which was very secure. And it was only a few weeks before Simon was born.
Mm.
At that time also, they advised all of us even prior to that, we'd been advised not to put our children in the care of anyone else, and that I was to never go out on my own with the children. I always had to be with Ben or with, close Thai friends. Mm. Life went on. We just, a lot of, some much worse things happened in those years in Petani while we were there, and the children were small. Not just bombings and hold-ups, but big demonstrations. So it was a lot of separatist political. We were always under military rule during those years. But I think in that moment when we sat on the bed and gave our lives again and the lives of our children to God and said, "You've called us here, and until you call us away, we will, you know, we need you to care for us." And these verses just came. You know, the main one I remember is, "Be still. Don't panic. Be still in your heart, in your soul. I am God." And that was right in our first year in South Thailand, and we stayed another 20. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And so do you feel like it was that kind of moment that really set you up for the rest of your ministry there in regards to God's faithfulness over your family?
Well, we've got lots of little stories. A lot of Ben's life was going out to remote villages, following up people who'd shown interest. And the local police in Kopo had said to him, "Before you go out, Ben, you need to report and check in to us in the morning. Tell us where you're going and check in when you get back." And that was just, I guess they were being protective of this foreign mission. Ben, the only thing that, Ben is brown and he doesn't stand out like a white person would, but he wore a crash helmet with a big visor on the front, because riding on the motorbike was insects and stuff when coming home at night. And so he did stand out, and he had the habit of telling me he would go to some village, but he ended up going somewhere else, and it was a bit nerve-wracking for me. And I said, "Well, look, if anything happens to you, if you have an accident, I won't know where to start looking for you." And we were 40 k's from the nearest other missionary worker, which on motorbike, and we didn't have phones in those days or anything. So there was one occasion when he checked in with the police before he went, and he forgot to check in when he got back. And it wasn't just soon after dusk, there's a bang on our door. Like, all police came and said, "Oh, good, you're home, Ben." And they said, "Where did you go, but how did it go?" And he said, "Oh, it's fine." He said, "Oh, it was good. You took lots of mates with you today, lots of friends with you." Ben was a bit puzzled. He said, "No, I went on my own." And he said, "No, that can't be. We've just picked up another gang that put wires across the bridges. And when the bike drives past, you flicks the driver off the bike.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they just leave the person lying there and they take the bike."
Yeah.
And we've just picked up a gang who had been working in that area. And they said they wanted your bike, because Ben's had a 250 and they have 175. You know? And they said, but they were too scared because you had too many people with you. And Ben sort of came away from that thinking, "I didn't have anybody with me, you know?" But we joked about that afterwards, said God's angels even ride motorbikes. But I mean, there are lots of stories that missionaries have to tell like that, but that was pretty real to us at that point. I think those incidences that we heard about, like policemen joking about it, coming back and saying that, made us realise that he's watching over us. It was just that little reminder that, you know, it didn't mean we could be foolhardy.
Yeah,
we had to be
exactly.
Sensible, but yeah.
This episode of From Everywhere to Everywhere was brought to you by OMF New Zealand. Our vision is to see God's people from Aotearoa engaged in mission among East Asia's billions. If any of the stories today resonated with you, or you'd like to find out more about OMF New Zealand, please visit our website omf.org/NZ. We're also on Instagram and Facebook, and we'd love to hear from you.